Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece
of more. Well, welcome back, guys. I'm Tom Allen. So Dave Scatina on the board. We must be futures pre-market. Dow futures up 75, S&P up 13, NASDAQ up 76. That's kind of after a deluge to the downside yesterday. How's that for a term? Deluge to the downside. And Kevin, are you with us?
Connected, yes. Am I ever with it? So, you know, that's always open to question. You know,
always open to anybody these days. I mean, your buddy, Paul, Rand Paul, was out after with Coach Fauci yesterday. They were fighting back and forth. Fauci's convinced they still need to wear masks after you get the vaccine. And Rand Paul was all over.
Yeah, I don't know what to call Fauci. I have a radio guy from Milwaukee that I listen to once in a while, and he always refers to him as the glorious Dr. Fauci. I tend to go with Saint Fauci.
He called. He said, "Why do people have to wear masks when after the vaccine, the people who have immunity have virtually 0% chance of going to get it?" And Fauci goes, "Here we go again with a theater. What's the theater? He's the one doing a theater."
Well, it was Paul had said, "When you're wearing a mask and there's no purpose to it, it's just theater."
Well, it is.
That's what that was about.
And not only that, I think it's unhealthy. I've got a couple articles. Doesn't make them right or not. They claim it is unhealthy for healthy people to wear masks. All you do is build up germs, and you cut your oxygen supply. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, what's the point?
Well, and healthy people don't spread viruses either.
No.
And people with immunity don't get viruses.
That's right.
You know, none of this makes any sense anymore. And the other thing that Paul got after him about was, well, Fauci started talking about, you know, variants, and they don't know. And he said, so based on speculation, you want to make policy based on something that you don't know will happen, but maybe kind of sort of might happen.
Well, it's true. It's exactly what they're doing. I'm just curious. I mean, everybody makes mistakes. I was having a discussion with people last night, and I was saying, in my opinion, which is all it is all the missteps people made along the way with the COVID, the closing these stores, that stores. I mean, in retrospect, I said, I don't really have an issue with anybody making a mistake. I mean, all you gotta do is be a traitor for a career. David, am I right? You make mistakes like hourly, a trade you shouldn't do. The trick is to realize you did and fix it or get rid of it or do something or change to a new position. Figure out what you have is not right and go to where you should be or you think you should be. I mean, slavery is not the term, but you're a slave to your previous decision. You can't be in any walk of life. Hey, I closed all the clothing stores. Hey, wait a minute, Target selling clothing. Well, either I got a bunch of Target stock in my butt pocket, or I say, that's not right. But a week later, just recognize it and change it. Humans know that, but this part about I made this bad call.
And in Michigan, that's exactly what happened, is they did recognize it and changed it. They said, we won't let Target or any other place sell it too either, and we'll just rope it off.
Well, that's better. Yeah, that's better.
We live in, but it's more fair, or it's more equitable. It's still not fair, and it's still preposterous, but hey, you know, there have been a lot of people, not a lot, but I've heard several commentaries that said, you know, when the history of this is written, we are going to be documenting some of the most disastrous and foolish decisions made. Now, you know, some of them, it has been obvious for quite a while that they need to be undone. That may not have been obvious at the beginning. I know we were working off of faulty models at the beginning, and a lot of people were screaming about that at the time. But okay, you had a faulty model, and that's that Cambridge model has been thrown out. But aside from that, there were also decisions that clearly we understood. I heard an interview with the guy you know, one of the whistleblowers in New York who talked about the nursing home situation there. And he said he knew when the order came out, just based on, you know, what happened in Kirkland, Washington, that was just a really wrong, bad thing to do. And yet, it was ignored, and everybody just charged ahead with what they did. You know, this is where the real problems are, is that we've done things that were stupid at the time, and then we've been unwilling to do things that proved to be stupid.
It's also somewhat of an attitude, Kevin, and you can't, I mean, the interesting thing about businesses, because I was in a room as a trader, and so was David for many years, where everybody had their own business. So you essentially had, well, there were 985, I believe is the number, if I can remember, 985 full badges, and at one point there was like 200 and some of the brown badges. So there's 1,100 essentially businesses in the room. And there's totally different attitudes on this, and some of the stuff is very chilling. And some of the stuff almost makes you want to pull out your water balloon gun. And one of it, where I don't think I've ever heard a more, to me, disgusting display, and yet, to most people, probably just fairly accurate. Then somebody on CNBC, it was on the radio, somebody did an interview with Penny Pritzker. And to me, it was one of the most disgusting things I ever heard for somebody at that level. And what I'm saying is, we know, the amorphous we, when you become an executive or you realize what the world is all about, is that when you have a free competitive society, a lot of people are going to fail at what they do. Okay? But that's not a red badge of some kind that says this guy's an idiot or this lady's an idiot. It means that they may be, some people have their greatest success on their third firm, or their third little business, because they learned from the first two. I mean, that's the vibrancy.
Yeah, successful people don't give up. That's the trait. It's not that they never fail. It's that they just don't give up.
But there's a real fine line. I'm in trouble these days saying things exactly the way I want to say them, but I'm going to try. There's a real fine line between Kevin O'Neill opening up a hot dog stand and blowing out his first day because maybe the location isn't right, or the neighborhood he picked doesn't like hot dogs, whatever it happens to be, or he doesn't have enough cash or something. That we know that in America, someplace, somewhere, you're going to be able to go out and buy a hot dog, as long as there's a demand for them. And somebody's going to provide them, right? We know that. From an upper level crust, I don't know the hot dog owners from Adam, right? All I know is there's a hot dog stand here and there and the other place. But you don't want things that are artificially done to screw some people. In other words, Penny Pritzker's point was, they said, well, look at all the businesses that are going under. And she says, well, that just happens. You know, things just happen. People go under all the time, and other people go up and they take their place, and everything will be okay. All right? So I don't have a problem, honestly. I use my local saloon as an example. I know this is a Tripoli Tap. I mean, Nick and Dino own the place. And if they screw up, if they spend too much money, if they gamble it away, hey, you know what? That's life. If they decide to change the menu and nobody likes it, I mean, there's nothing anybody can do about that if things change. But if stuff appears from the outside where people make decisions that affect them, that there's no way that they could be possibly... I mean, if somebody makes a really stupid decision, like closing those places down for months, not even 10 people in a place, and all of a sudden they're out of business, the cavalier, hey, in 2 years there's going to be a saloon where the Tripoli Tap was, who gives a bleep? Like Penny Pritzker basically said. That's not right, Kevin. I mean, I knew people went out on the trading floor, people took too much risk, stuff happens, they didn't pay attention to the tail risk, whatever you want to call it, I'll use a technical term. That's not the same as when long-term capital, I don't know if I've told this story, I don't know if David knows this story, long-term capital with the Russian, they were involved in the Russian debt crisis. So they're going under, right? And the market's, you know, basically getting its butt kicked.
And I don't think we call these things crises anymore, Tom. I think it's a challenge.
It's a challenge, yeah.
Go on.
So the things are going downhill, and all of a sudden, in those days, you only had expiration once a month. So expiration Friday was a big deal. So all of a sudden, at like 10 o'clock on an expiration Friday, they say something to the effect of Fed's like lowering the discount rate or something that was totally out of left field. The market flies up and calls that were at, you know, a quarter, close at like $7 or $10 or some huge number that, you know, was totally, and I get, as soon as it happened, I just got the feeling that this was being done on purpose. Somehow there was a method. There was no reason on that day. So it just so happens the next week, because I was chairman of the marketing committee, I'm out in New York watching a World Series game because we're whining and dining these bleeps. And, one guy gets out down, sits down next to me and he goes, "Oh, you're an OEX guy, aren't you, Tom?" And I go, "Oh, yeah." And he goes, "Hey, how bad, was it last week for the people in the OEX?" Because that, David, am I right? That was the market in those days. It was the second biggest exchange in the world, was the OEX pit.
Yes, it was.
And, so he goes, "How bad do you guys get nailed in there?" And I immediately, the hair goes up on the back of my neck, and I go, wait a minute. Why are you axing? You know? And he goes, "Well, I got a call from one of my buddies at the Fed, and he wanted to know how much, you know, how many people got hurt on the trading floors from this decision." And the upshot of it was, is they wanted to bail out some of the people that were in trouble with long-term capital. So they basically let them know that they were going to raise this thing mid-morning, and those people bought a lot of calls in the OEX as a way to bail them out. And I'm sitting there thinking, this really, really sucks to pick winners like that and those kinds of things. And I said, well, to be honest with you, two or three of my, I won't say best friends, but friends I've had in the pit the whole time, basically got carried out and probably will never trade again. And one of them, I won't use the last name, remember Barb, who's standing next to me across the aisle? She was one of them. And a few other people around me. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, well, so just a few then," he says to me. I said, "Well, there are a few that I happen to be friends with. They're not just a few, right?" You know, what did Spock say?
One of the few and see how you feel about
it. Yeah, what did Spock say? Sometimes the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many, or something like that? You know, you wonder, what are these people thinking? Because if you don't know the person, it's okay. I mean, because I said something a year, I remember it because maybe one of the few smart things I've ever said. A year ago Tuesday night was the day before everything shut down. It was the day before St. Patrick's Day, correct? So I'm sitting in the Triple E Tap, knowing that the place is closing the next day. And Scott Benjaminson is a bartender. And Scott's an actor. He's on Chicago PD once in a while. And he's been on the show a few times. Really nice guy, real bright guy. And he says, "Well, you know, somehow or another, we're going to have to get all through this." And I said, "Scott, here's my issue with this. I know... and whenever this ends, one way or the other, someday I'll be able to walk down the block and have a beer at the Triple E Tap." I said, "I just want it to be Nick and Dino and you here, not some people I don't know." I said, "The rest of the world doesn't care as long as they get a beer, but I care because you guys are my friends." It's a big difference, Kevin. And I don't think these people, out of sight, out of mind, I don't know them, I don't care. I mean, that is way too heavy in this politics today. Once somebody votes for you, they don't care about you, right? It's pretty scary what's going down here. I mean, it's hard to keep a personal touch at that level, but some people have been able to do that. Roosevelt did, I think, and it made him a traitor to his class. There's a few people that have. I think Lincoln did, because he was a backcountry lawyer. There's people that have. And I don't know that we're...
So even the stuff, and what you're saying is that some of this stuff may be technically legal, but that doesn't mean it isn't wrong.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
And
there's other parts of it, like a report I heard this morning. I think it was a DA in Florida. And guess which attorneys were winning cases or were getting charges dropped? Well, those were attorneys who contributed to his political campaign.
Well, duh.
And so they were bringing their clients in, you know, they were representing clients who magically got charges dropped consistently.
Well, Kevin,
it's corruption in either case. It's just whether it's legalized corruption or illegal corruption.
Well, the single biggest lie, not the single biggest, there's a lot of them around, one of the single biggest lies that there is from politicians and judges who are now politicians because their races are... I mean, I don't know about appointed, I don't know about elected, but I know that once you're elected and people start giving you money, the single biggest lie, other than, you know, "I was on the sofa all downstairs all night, honey," or something along those lines, is, "Oh, no, that check I got from that guy will never influence me." Well, I tell you what, I've been around a lot of rich people in my life, and everybody thinks that rich people are philanthropic is out of their mind, right? I mean, someday you want to make a name for yourself and sort of give back like a Bill Gates. Maybe because you're sorry of the antitrust things you stole along the way, whatever it is. I can see, people do that, but I know during the Depression,
And even in Gates's case,
yeah,
you know, he's giving back, but he's got investments and everything where he's quote giving back.
Try and walk into some big, huge glass building with some big corporation's name on it, or even a small corporation. Just walk in and say, write me a check for $5,000. Good luck with that, you know, the homeless guy or whatever. But all of a sudden they give $5,000 to some judge they never heard of. They're doing that. Why? I mean, because they're afraid their heart's going to pop out of their chest. They're feeling threatened. I mean, what? There's some, and everybody will tell you, and I think the uninformed will tell you, okay, what are the, all I'm doing is buying access, that they'll pick up the phone and maybe listen to me. Talk about bull bleep. You remember, I could say his name, I hope he's listening. Remember my buddy, Bill Moriarty? He's come down once in a while. Big, good basketball player, and loved his beer. He went to Marquette. He came down once in a while. Well, he's a civil engineer, but of course he's a real serious Southside Chicagoan, and he's working for a civil engineering company here. Well, yeah, but this is a company that goes back so far that I think they did the subways, the State Street Subway or something. I mean, that's how long ago these guys went. But then all the old guys died and the thing fully. And he ends up down in, I think in Houston or someplace. So he talks to the mayor and he says, why don't we have a big breakfast or luncheon and I'll pay for it. And, have your engineering guy come down and just sketch up on the wall. The engineering projects you guys are thinking about doing in the next 5 years, so we can all kind of get a little heads up and maybe plan and give you some bids or help out or blah, blah, blah. He charges all the other engineering companies that are a bunch of idiots like $2,000 to come to his seminar. Then he turns around and puts his name on the $20,000 check and hands it to the mayor. I'm like, this is genius. Now, I don't know if he ever got a job from it. Or anything like that. But I'm sitting there going, he goes, do you believe how stupid these other guys are? I go, they're not from Chicago, what can I tell you? But I mean, obviously, the mayor's going to remember a $20,000 check from somebody, right? Now, whether he ever got...
Well, and that's the same thing with the bundlers, you know?
Yeah.
They get a bunch of individual checks, but they're the ones that are presenting them. So... You know, they're the ones who are important. They're the ones who become the movers and shakers.
So if a high-end guy like David gets invited to one of these Lincoln Park things where, you know, there's some huge house, and they go, and he comes up with, you know, $5,000 so the bundler can give the check for $50,000. Now what, if David wants influence, what does he do? He calls the bundler, right? He doesn't get a chance to call, you know, Obama, I don't think, does he? He gets to call the bundler.
Well, he either does that or he starts doing his own bundling.
But, I mean, but you don't get, that $5,000 or $2,000 gets you influence with the bundler. It doesn't get you up the chain with Durbin or somebody else, or right? I mean, you're not getting that far for $2,000, I don't think.
I wouldn't guess so, no.
But anyway, what I'm going back to is you can say, like in the OEX pit, there's going to be people that blow out over a period of time. That's the nature of the business. And that's why if you had 100 people who were necessary to do business, you wanted 400 badges, because people come and they go. When it's busy, you want it to be 200 or 300. When it's not so busy, you know, people have other stuff to do. You didn't want to make sure you change somebody to their spot on the floor. And if a few people blew out, you wanted other people to be able to walk in. That I get. That's competition. That's America. But when I want somebody else making a decision that blows 50 of those people out and then say, what's the difference? Another 50 came in. That's a different story. It's a fine line, but it's a different story. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't even think it's that fine a line, Tom. I think it's absolutely, it's just, it almost should be obvious to people, but apparently it isn't.
Well, if you're Penny Pritzker, it isn't, because every time you ask somebody to do something and you throw money at them, it gets done. You don't really care who the Amazon delivery guy is, do you? I mean, if you're that level, They're not going to say hello to them.
Nowadays, you don't even meet them. They don't knock on your door. They just leave the packages.
Well, that's true. All right. So, what do you think of yesterday? It's a good thing I didn't do any NCAA pools because I'd have gotten blown out. I thought for sure Michigan State was on a roll here. I would have lost my first game for that.
Well, I thought Michigan State would win too, but I didn't have to pick the first four. So you
lucked out.
You know, my opinion was if Michigan State won last night, they'd probably win a couple games in the tournament. But if UCLA won last night, they probably might win. They could probably win one against a higher seed. And then UCLA had an important player, get hurt late in the game last night, so that was over. I wish I could have stayed up for it. It looks like it was a good finish. I saw the highlights. How PO'd would you be if you were a Michigan State fan? The guy's going to the line. You're up three. The guy for UCLA is going to the line in the last 20 seconds or so. Misses the front end. UCLA got the offensive rebound, which would drive me nuts because you have position on the lane. To when he's shooting. So he gets the offensive rebound. They kick it around a couple of times, and then he puts it up and gets not only puts in the layup, but got fouled.
God.
So, you know, how many ways can you bollocks that play at the end? Nice going, Michigan State.
Kevin, when did, for those of you who don't watch this tour,
I think one of the lessons out of college, watching a lot of college basketball, is you find out, you know, people get frustrated with their own teams and you know, their inconsistency or their lack of execution at the end of games. Turns out hardly anybody ever executes properly at the end of a game.
No, we're talking about 19-year-old kids. Everybody was a senior.
Oh, yeah, I'd hate coaching that age group because they all think they know what they're doing and they don't.
Here's a technical question. When did the colleges go to, for those of you who don't watch this very closely, because I used to be the guy under the basket, pros still use you still use every block at on the free throw lane, right? And the college is backed off a block, correct?
Yeah, I don't know when they changed that.
Which makes it really hard for the offense to get a rebound. You almost have to clank off the back of the rim and fly out because it gives you like how many feet of space there. If you look at the free throw line, there's little blocks, and those are where people are supposed to stand when a guy shoots a free throw. Well, the college no longer uses the block under the basket. They backed off a block. And I'm going to say it's got to be 4 or 5 years. And I don't know if that's considered, if they consider that a success.
Do they
consider that a success, not a success? I mean, one of the reasons I think is it with only five fouls in college and not near the depth you have in the pros, last thing you want is a bunch of fouls on free throws. I think that probably was somewhat of a decision.
That's probably part of it. Part of it is they just don't want the scrum.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, plus
that gets dangerous.
Yep, and so when Kevin says they get the offensive rebound, it's either kind of a freak bang off the rim, or else somebody really was asleep because you got all kinds of room.
Or a total abject failure at blocking out.
Yeah, if you block out, the thing should really drop between you and the. What did Jerry Sloan used to say? If everybody blacks out properly, the ball should drop in the middle of five guys. Right.
Or hit the floor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hit the floor in the middle of five people that are blocking guys out. And then when one guy goes for it. But, I think that this field is, to me, I mean, you're the expert. I don't think I've ever seen a field that was more even. Do you? I mean, Illinois has got, a terrific team. So does Michigan. But Illinois's got, I don't know if they're depth. If that big guy in the middle gets three fouls on him early, their second string center is pretty good, but he's kind of a foul monger too. I mean, if the referees control these college games to a huge extent, seemingly much more than pros, with the six fouls and the more depth.
Well, yeah, the pros have six fouls, Tom, but they also play eight more minutes of basketball.
But they also have more people that they rotate in and out. I mean, you don't normally see at the end of a pro game, you know, a team with five guys having four and five fouls. But it's real normal in a college game to have at the end of the game having.
I wouldn't say normal. It happens, but I wouldn't call that.
Well, when the teams are really evenly matched, it happens kind of a lot. Plus, they immediately sit a guy with two for like 20 minutes, so they don't really
often. Yeah,
I mean it's a
yes. There's some coaches that once you get if you get two in the first half, you're done for the half.
Yeah.
So if you get two in the first 5 minutes, you're done for a long time. That isn't unusual. So you know what can you do? You know, players got to be smart too. You know,
oh, yeah.
You know how many times have you seen the guy get the dumb third foul in the first half or the dumb fourth foul where you say, why, you know, did you not know you had four fouls? Why'd you reach?
Well, trying to,
why did you try to do that? Just give up the basket this time. It's, and live to fight another day.
Well, trying to be careful on the basketball floor is sort of akin to, I will not leave this putt short. And then you inevitably do, right? I mean, it's just the nature of sport. I mean, in a lot of ways.
To a certain degree, yeah. when you say, don't think it, of course you're going to think it then. But the point is that a lot of guys don't think about it ahead of time. You know, you have to have it in your mind. If everything that you're going to consider doing is made in real time at the speed of basketball, you're going to make a lot of decisions. So it's when you get that fourth foul or the third foul and you say, okay, I got to back off next time the guy, you know, next time the guy drives on me. And it's up to the coach to say, if you can't live with that, then you got to take him out of the game. Or you can live with it, or you can say, just play. If you foul out, you foul out. There's lots of different ways to approach it, but if you haven't thought about it ahead of time, then you're not going to make the right play.
But also,
same thing, and, you know, this is true in every sport, and you see it all the time. Football, how many times have you seen the, what was it? It was Indiana Penn State last year, where the guy on Penn State scored when he should have hit the ground.
Yeah.
Because then Penn State would have just taken a knee and run out the clock. As it turned out, though, he scored, and then Indiana went down and drove for a touchdown, got the two-point conversion, and then won the game in overtime. If the guy just would have hit the dirt, Indiana was out of timeouts and that. Well, you could see this guy running to the end zone, and as he was closing on the end zone, it dawned on him that he shouldn't score. But it was too late. It's momentum carried.
That's, that happens so rarely that
this
I was surely hope.
Thing that you discuss in the huddle beforehand.
Right. I was going to say, that's not then, something you would
you know,
be.
Then you don't make the mistake.
If they didn't say anything about it in the huddle, I almost would give the kid a total dispensation. It's not something you think.
Oh, I absolutely would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's coach's job. It's teammates' job. It's everybody. Yeah, good teams in every sport, or really good teams in every venture, talk a lot. You know, they talk to each other. They remind each other. They don't take offense at being reminded of things. You know, that's the way good teams work.
Well, that's what I was talking about the referees,
so
Kevin.
Clearly, they didn't talk about it, or if they did, this guy just totally brain farted. But that's typical.
Well, the idea about the fourth foul, and we got to have a break here, and we talk about what's going on in the world with the market going down so much yesterday. The weird part is in basketball, though, if I have four fouls and you're driving, and if I got four, let's just say the referees aren't happy with me, no matter what you're doing, if you could easily go by me, you're going to find a way to make contact, right? That's just the way people are.
If you're Rodman, they're blowing the whistle.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, I'm trying to back off from you, and you won't let me. And all of a sudden, there's some contact, and all of a sudden, I'm out, and I'm going, wait a minute, I was not the aggressor here, but it doesn't matter. I mean, some of these refs, I think, some of them are awful, but most of them are good. SP Futures up 650. We got some green today. No green yesterday. Yesterday, all red. Up. SP's up 650. The NASDAQ is up 58. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali. He's Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 56. I think today, Dave, isn't the last day that the marches are trading. I mean, I've got them on here, but I have a feeling right after the opening today, the marches are going to come off.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And we're going to be doing Junes. So those are what? The SPMs, SPMs, right?
Yeah.
And the what would happen, David? You think if we wouldn't have started the S&Ps in the September quarter, if the first one was the SPU, so it immediately became known as the SPUs. What if it would have been the March quarter? Would have been like the sperms or something? Or what about the
what's the matter with you?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we're not March is SPH, and then June right. is SPM. What's the December is X?
U. Right?
No, that's Spoo.
No, that was Spoo. That was right.
September.
December is...
December is X.
X, yeah.
But it wouldn't have been the Spexes.
Right.
Whatever. Spoo sounded good, and it stayed Spoos. Anyway, Dow futures are down 12. Around the rest of the world, we've got... Well, let's talk about yesterday, first of all. Ouch. Dow was only down 153 because Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan are going way up. Don't worry. Your stocks are going down, but the banks are doing well. Doesn't that make you feel good, everybody? The banks are doing good. They always seem to do good with the... I mean, and people who argue about the left and the right, I'll tell you what, there are constants in this world. Banks always get helped out. Didn't matter whether it was Bush or Obama, banks got helped out. Just saying. So yesterday, the S&P's down 58, that's 1.5%, but get this, the NASDAQ down 409, that's 302 on the percentage number, so that's a lot. Today we got Europe, the DAX down 87, that's 0.6%. FTSE down 55.8%, CAC down 37.6. In Asia, Nikkei was down 424. No, they were up yesterday, remember? Even though we had changed overnight, they were a little slow to get on that. That's 1.4%. Shanghai down 58, 1.7. Hang Seng down 414.7. That's 1.4%. So they're getting beat up over there pretty good. Bonds, 1.68. They're at 1.69, actually down 4 basis points. They were almost up to 1.75, I think 1.49 yesterday. Bund, -0.29. 10-year Japanese, +0.11. And the UK is +0.83. Oil, $0.22 to $60.22, but remember there were $0.64 like 2 days ago. So even though it's up this morning, it's a dead cat bounce here in the oil. Brent up $0.09, $63.37. Natural gas unchanged at $2.49. RBOB $1.94. RBOB was like $2.06 last week, so it's almost a dime change in RBOB in a week. It's kind of a lot. Gold up $4.80 to $17.37. Gold was up. The swing you see yesterday in the numbers really don't tell a story of how much. After Powell talked on Wednesday, we were up on Wednesday. We were up huge Wednesday night, and then the turn came because gold was up. I'm going to say gold was well over 1750 on Wednesday night. Now it's 1737 after being up $5 today. So that's how big the turn was yesterday. Silver over down 17 cents, 2617. And our crypto, the Bitcoin's up 876. That's 58,636. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, all kinds of sports.
Yeah, good morning. It's 640 in Chicago. Traffic this morning on a Friday morning is not too bad. They have a couple incidents to report. There was an earlier accident on a tri-state 294 north before 75th Street, stop-and-go congestion. There also is a closure due to an accident at Wolf Road in the Franklin Park area, south between West Grand Avenue and Fullerton Avenue. Excuse me. Weather today in Chicago is currently 34 and clear. The high today, we're going to see the sun today. It's going to be 40 degrees in Phoenix for our Phoenix listeners. 52 this morning. For a high of 85 and sunny. In the NHL last night, the Coyotes lose to the Ducks 3-2 in overtime, and our Chicago Blackhawks drop another one to the Lightning 4-2. In the NBA, the Suns lose to the Timberwolves 123-119. The Bulls will take on Denver tonight. NCAA tournament, March Madness started last night with the play-in games. Drake beat Wichita State 53-52 for the first tournament victory in 50 years to the date. UCLA also beat the Chiefs' favorite Michigan State team in overtime, 86-80. Illinois takes on Drexel today at noon, and Loyola plays Georgia Tech at 3 o'clock. We also had a little spring baseball. Sox beat the Royals 9-7. Cubs beat Cleveland 4-3. Back to you, Chief.
I don't know why I didn't pay that much attention. Well, with the COVID and everything else, nobody was paying that much attention to baseball. But I just assumed that the Cubs were going to offer John Lester 1 year and he'd be back with the Cubs. And he's pitching for the Nationals. Why did the Cubs decide to not do that? They want to be a real crappy team or what?
I was kind of surprised at that move, too. He wanted to stay, but they moved on from him. So, like our Bears, I don't want to mention anything about the Bears today.
Well, they got rid of Kyle Fuller.
Kyle Fuller gone, and we have Andy Dalton as our announced starter. I don't understand what they're doing, but
they're saving money.
Yeah, I guess
they're.
Well, they were over the cap, so Kyle Fuller is they cut him loose because they had to make salary cap room. So I get the decision, although I think there were others that they could have cut loose instead and kept Kyle Fuller because he's good. So I hate the decision. I knew somebody was going to have to go.
Well, if they would have said you can stay for seven, is he worth at his age? Was he worth 10 in the open market, I guess is my question. I don't know if we know the answer to that.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
We will find out.
Hey, I have a couple of pieces of news here. And one of my, an interesting inflation story, since we also were doing some sports a minute ago. I have one of the most famous contracts. This is what, you know, my biggest concern, everybody's figured it out by now because all they do is hear about it if they listen, is that the people we have in charge now don't seem to have a friggin' clue what an inflation does to a society and how the entire difference, and that's what bothers me about listening to CNBC and Bloomberg, and I don't listen to Fox, but once in a while my brother turns it on over there just to see what they're saying, Fox News. The people talking about inflation have never lived through it, have never seen it, and absolutely have zero clue of what they're talking about. Is that fair? It's like me trying to explain to a bunch of guys that were in World War II what it was really like to be there. That's a conversation I probably should just zip my lips, right? Because they're the ones that were there, not me, right? And yet everybody's an expert on something they never saw. But anyway, everybody I think at least has heard of, one of the most famous contracts in the history of sports was Magic Johnson first went to the Lakers. I think he played 1 year, maybe two, and they offered him a contract that said, you're going to make $1 million a year for the next 25 years. We want you to be a Laker for life, first as a player, then as a coach or front office or whatever it is. They realized that Magic Johnson was special. And when they went on the road, instead of boozing it up with the other guys, he was having business meetings and so forth. And he's a real bright guy and has been a big success. He was the first guy to take Starbucks, which Starbucks wouldn't do it. He was a Starbucks, I think he was their first franchisee, Kevin, David? And he took Starbucks into black neighborhoods and actually was very successful.
Yeah, he did that with Starbucks. He's done that with movie theaters. Anything that would create in depressed neighborhoods, anything that would create commerce and give them, you know, not just identity, but cash flow into the area, he did. And he's been extremely successful doing it. And I think that's really cool. Anyway, continue.
Well, I'm saying it must have been obvious right out of the gate.
He basically got a Bobby Bonilla contract, but he was worth it.
Yeah, well, but he also, it was obvious right out of the gate that you wanted him in the front office after 2 years. He wasn't just going to be, you know, some dumb basketball, baseball, football player. Not that that isn't a gross generalization, that the minute they're done playing, you want him out of the building. I mean, he's not, it's not a racial thing. There's a lot of those guys, you wonder how they get up and get dressed in the morning. But, I mean, you know, you can say that for traders too. Anyway, my story here, the education is, because the inflation, it was still pretty high in 1981, going to 1991. In 1981, he signs a contract. In 1991, and we don't even think that way anymore, what would have been his effective salary 10 years later if he'd have stuck with that contract?
Half, $700,000, I don't know.
Pretty good, $646,000. That's pretty good, Kevin. But you were there, so you understand that. Today, people say, what are you talking about? It's still $1 million. What's $1 million? What's the problem? No, there's a big problem. You know, because he didn't have an escalation clause in the contract, essentially. So what actually did happen is after 3 or 4 or 5 years, so many other people were making more than him when he was one of the top, easily top two or three players in basketball. Even the Lakers got, unlike Jerry Reinsdorf with Scottie Pippen, the Lakers said, this is crazy, we don't want our best, you know, one of our best players getting paid less than everybody else. They changed the contract. I don't know, was it 3 years later or four, Kevin? It wasn't very long. With Reinsdorf, you know, he was like the judge in Caddyshack. You know, sent people younger and new to the gas chamber felt they deserved it or felt I owed it to them. Where Reinsdorf felt he owed it to Pippen to not pay him. For those that don't know that story, Pippen signed a longer-term contract at a time when he had two members of his family in wheelchairs, and he just wanted to be able to take care of his family. Obviously, the Bears started.
Well, he was also coming off of back surgery.
Yeah, but I mean,
the long term had appeal to him because there was at least some degree of uncertainty about how long his career would be. It turned out it was very long, so he signed like a 7-year deal, something like that.
But I mean, it's at some point, even if you like baseball owners in those days back before free agency, you absolutely could not give somebody a bonus. I don't know if people remember this. So some pitcher came in as kind of a rookie and say threw a no-hitter. What the owners would have to do, David, is probably before your time, if Dave Scatina is getting paid $20,000, you couldn't give him a bonus of $1,000. But you could rip up his contract and give him a new one for $21,000. But there, at some point along the way, again, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is Jerry Reinsdorf, but he had to sit there and say, why am I doing this? I mean, why do I have, you know, one of the top five players in basketball, you know, making essentially what a rookie's making? I mean, who's looking bad here, me or him?
Well, he did the same thing with Jordan too, and you know, Jordan had a long term deal that had him for probably the last 3 or 4 years of it had him underpaid by league standards, and the difference is that the way the rules were is you could go over the cap to sign your own guys. So they always waited with Jordan's, you know, like his last 2 or 3 years, he was on a 1-year deal, and they always waited on on Jordan's contract until everybody else was signed. They had their cap situation taken care of, and then Jordan, and I think he was getting like $30 million a year.
Yeah, well, Pippen was nowhere near that. He was like two or something
on his 1-year deals. Pippen, you know, I don't know if Pippen ever would have been taken care of similarly. Ultimately, the Bulls did do a sign and trade for him that allowed him to get a pretty good contract. And in fact, it was a pretty good contract that that wound up he wound up not performing to it for a lot of reasons. Health being part of it, and but I don't think that made up for everything else. But in Jordan's case, they absolutely did, because they could just so fantastically overpay him his last few years that they did catch him up.
No, they did, and they never did with Pippen. Anyway, so I'm saying you have to be real careful when this is about to happen, and when you start having a Fed chairman. First, there's none, then there's some, then there's transitory, and then we don't worry about it. This is all in like 8 weeks. I mean, I should hold myself up as a consultant for anybody doing a 3-year contract right now. If you don't have a, but then again, Kevin, I asked this question yesterday, and I'd love you and David opine on this. And I want to talk about this China situation yesterday. I don't know if you guys have read that, but when I was doing the stuff for Pullman, and I mentioned this yesterday, so I'll be brief. The CPI was somewhat of a legitimate, I'll say. Arbiter of what was going on in the world. I mean, when I was doing the, the MBTA, that was the contract I was on. So when the inflation went up, 3% and a quarter, and I called my counterpart that, back days you actually called people. I called my counterpart in the MBTA and said, I just did the calculation of the contracts for 60 mil. We were up to 62 before on the inflation. So by the way, another 3%. We're up to, what's the number? We're up to 60, 60 million, 490 or something. And the guy goes, I got the same numbers, Tom. Good to go. And then the legal guy would send the new contract. And, but nobody said, hey, the CPI is 1% because these stoops are trying to make it sound like there isn't any, but all of our prices just went up 15%. And I never had to have that, I'll use the term discussion with the guy. Where he would probably have said, that's your problem. it's not mine. I don't work for the government. But you could have put us, we ended up getting I'm going to say $8 to $9 million more on the $60 million contract. And every part of it was legit because we flowed through out of let's say we got 10 extra. I'll bet we flowed through 8 to other people. The unions, the guys who made the trucks, the guys who made the seats, the guys, those kinds of things, the air conditioners, the big items, we flowed through most of it. But there never was a bitch about, wait a minute, my prices are up 15 and the CPI is up 1. What's with these idiots? But right now, I don't know how I'd put that together, Kevin. I mean, I would be very remiss if somebody paid me a fat consulting fee and I did the exact same contract that I would have remembered from Pullman. Oh, by the way, every quarter we adjust for CPI. CPI. What if what we're buying from somebody contains wood or steel, which pretty much everything does, and where I'm doing houses, and I got an escalation clause in houses based on the CPI, and the price of lumber's up doubles in 6 months. I mean, I'm not ashamed at all to say the lying regarding the CPI affects everything. I don't even think you can have a escalation clause now that's legit because they're lying on the main number. I mean, they've totally screwed up commerce here, or about to. It's about to be recognized, let's put it that way. I just see it sooner because that's what I did for a while. Or am I totally off base here and I'm way ahead of the game?
No, it'll actually be interesting to see, and I really haven't paid attention to it. It may be happening already. But how many, the one bastion of unions is public sector. And I wonder if... if they have cost of living adjustments in there, and if they do, how are they dealing with the disconnect between what we're seeing in the world and what they're getting in their cost of living?
I think they have a 3% minimum.
Price indices.
I think some of the teachers here, David, kick me if I'm right. I seem to think that last year they got a 3% COLA increase, even though cost of living was like 1.5. I think they have like a 3% minimum. Something along those lines. I'm not positive. If some of the listener knows better, please call in. But I think they have a minimum because they got raises when the CPI was nothing. I think they have a minimum, if it's two or three or something. Well, of course, the rest of the world doesn't have a minimum, right? Hey, did you guys happen to, this is late breaking news here, did you guys happen to check out this China thing yesterday? They've been this big, first big powwow under Biden.
Yeah, a little pissing match that they had. That, you know, this has not been a good foreign policy week for the United States. Between Putin and Xi and even Kim Jong-un in there piling on, they've all kind of, insulted Biden.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a CNBC article by Evelyn Chang.
Good to be respected in the world again, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'll show you how old I am. It's a CNBC article by Evelyn Chang, in the immortal words of Maddie Weber. Chief, why the hell do you keep saying to people who you're quoting when nobody ever does that anymore? And I'd say, Maddie, because that's what you're supposed to do. You don't use quotes from somebody's article if you don't say who the person is. It's stealing. What's the matter with you? But he understands. But he did say, nobody ever does that anymore, Chief. They just take whatever is everybody else's article and they act like it's theirs. Anyway, the first high-level gathering of U.S. and Chinese officials under President Joe Biden kicked off with an exchange of insults at a pre-meeting press event. Yeah, and he says the planned 4-minute photo session for the officials to address reporters ended up lasting 1 hour and 15 minutes due to a frothy exchange. So we started off by saying, interesting. We started talking about all the stuff that we don't like about China, Taiwan, and all the other stuff. So they came out with this is telling, by Yang, J-I-E-C-H-I, what the hell is that? Jicy? I don't know, it's probably not the way you pronounce it. The United States does not have the qualification to say that it wants to speak to China from a position of strength. What does that tell you?
China doesn't see a position of strength. You know, you and Lou got into this yesterday, and I thought it was a really good conversation. And you, I don't know if you got a chance to read the article I sent you, but there, I sent you something that I've referred to this on the air a few times. The concept of infinite game. I think very often you see the U.S. is. Let me back up. Finite game is, baseball or basketball or something like that, where you know exactly how many competitors there are. You know the rules. The rules don't change, and everybody plays by the rules. And at the end, you walk away with a winner and loser. Infinite game is a lot of what we do in our lives. So if you think of it as the ultimate example, United States and Vietnam. United States was playing to win the war. The North Vietnamese were just playing to prolong the war until, infinitely, until the United States finally got exhausted of it and went away. And China is really, really good at infinite game. And the part of the characteristics of infinite game is not just that you are playing to prolong the game, but the rules change. You don't know who all the competitors are. Some of them come, some of them go. And really there are no rules. And so I think the current administration is guilty of it. I definitely think the Trump administration was guilty of it. And I think as you go back one by one, we were guilty of it. And just take North Korea as the example. How many times have we tried to strike deals or actually did strike deals with the North Koreans? We did it for Clinton. We did it in Bush. We did it, we tried to negotiate with the Obama administration and them. And then Trump tried to do it. And essentially, North Korea will agree to something, and then they don't do it because rules change. Sorry, infinite game. Rules change. And we don't get it, and it just frustrates the heck out of the United States. China's doing the same thing, and I think the way the U.S. has to become that infinite type of player who is saying, okay, we'll change the rules too. Whenever it suits us, we're going to change the rules. And I think that's how you have to go about dealing with them, and that's what we're seeing now out of the Chinese. It's just if you frame their behavior in that context, it'll make a whole lot more sense.
Well, it makes sense, but we still there's a I don't know how do you I think our government, to a large extent, and again, I go back to my George Stigler classes. We got a couple of minutes here, and I'm trying to keep this as short as possible. I mean, we get out of government kind of a mirror of what we are. And right now, if you look around society, I mean, there's reasons why if there's a really horse bleep news story, you put it out at Friday night when people are already in the bars. Well, we used to be in the bars. And, because by Monday, we're on to the next thing. I mean, the news is like trying to take, as they say in the trading floor, trying to take a drink out of a fire hydrant. You can't do it. And in our life.
Well, and short attention span, too.
Right. And I'm going to say baseball games are too long, but even if they were 3 hours or 2.5 hours to 3 hours like they used to be, it's way beyond the attention span of the normal younger American now. I'm not saying anything wrong there. It just is. I mean, most of the movies that you and I liked that were mostly all dialogue, that they took, you know, an hour and a half to essentially spin the whole yarn, they're not interested. Nobody's gotten shot. Nobody's gotten blown up, right? So it's, I'm not castigating it, but the idea of the 48th parallel in Korea, you know, we had that war was in, 1950, for God's sake. And still, that has been, it has worked to a certain extent. There's been no other war. We were pissed off at those guys because we were pissed off at them then. They're still the same idiots they were then. But it has worked pretty much spectacularly. And every time Trump tries to bring it to a conclusion, it doesn't go anywhere, no matter what the president is, left or right. Same way with Russia. I mean, Ronald Reagan and those guys, they said, look, we're not going to attack them. They're not going to attack us. Those are the rules. So somehow or another, we're going to have this fainting game, and we're just going to go on year after year and make sure that nothing happens like this year, and we're going to manage the problem. We're never going to solve it. We haven't solved it to this day because we just can't. Same way with the Muslim thing. Okay, now, I'm not talking about, you know, the Muslims that have moved here that look to me like they're acclimating faster than anybody I've ever seen. But I'm talking about the people that the heart and soul of the Muslim religion in Iran and those places, they want secular involvement in government of the religion. And in this country, we do not want that. I want to say those two views of the world are never going to change. But that doesn't mean we have to kill each other every day. It just means that we make it through another year without some kind of an engagement. As the rules change, you manage the situation, Kevin, right? You're never going to talk the other side.
Right.
You know.
But if you, again, if you go to, you know, the international conflict with Islam in the world, or just take, Israel and various Islamic states, they've made some, we've made some good transactions and some good progress in the last 2 years, but ultimately, the Palestinians, what are they doing? Do they think they can single-handedly defeat Israel? No, they're just playing the game. They're just keeping the game going.
Well, I think the Palestinians.
And they frustrate a lot of people in the process, and so there's people who say, well, why don't we just give them what they want and make this stop?
Well, we got a dash here, Kevin, but I think to a certain extent, let's talk about this next week because it's an interesting problem. I think the Palestinians, in some regard, are the saloon keepers that are out of business now. We just wish they'd shut up because they're not on the world stage. They're not powerful enough. We just wish they'd just be quiet. And that's wrong, you know, I think. But anyway, let's talk about that next week. SP Futures up 10 now. Yes! NASDAQ Futures up 68. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday's horrendous day. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Dave Scatena on the board. SP Futures. Up by the Junes are up 8.25, and the NASDAQ is up 65 as we're trying to come back from yesterday's, I'll use the term fiasco, especially in the NASDAQ. But there's, you know, there's a ways to go if the market really doesn't like where it's at. A lot of stocks are still at incredible numbers. Again, not the ones that we normally look at, or we, the guys of me anyway, because my clients don't have a lot of the stocks that I think are the ones that are really overpriced. So it's not really an issue I have to deal with, at least right now. But I look at him and I'm kind of stunned. Carl, how are you, bud? Are you there? Do we have Carl?
I think we lost Carl. Let me get him back.
All right. Individual stocks this morning. We've got Boeing up 278. We got Caterpillar up 283. Nike came out with earnings. And they're down 302, so not horrible on that. It's still trading 140. So we got some stuff. We got some stuff moving. We got Ford up 48 cents after. It was up yesterday, and it took a bath yesterday, and it started up, and then it finished up down. I have a lot of people that are in Ford, so I can't say they were overly happy about that. And I have a big position in Ford for my people. But I also was concerned a little bit about the gold and silver yesterday. Got hammered as well, and it's pretty tough to get a beat on just what the stocks are going to be that are going to be heading forward. Because it's pretty clear that. Hey, Carl, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good. A little phone game here, I guess. But hey, it's all good.
We'll blame Matt Weber, even though he's not here.
Oh, I think it's the black choppers, you know.
Oh, they're coming after you. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah, you know. Hey, there it is.
So I hear they're bringing you over to sending you north to Alaska. Wasn't that a movie? And it was a song, right? To try and get together between the Chinese and the U.S. guys and bring a bottle of vodka or something and get everybody all back together and lovey-dovey.
Well, I think that's kind of, you know, that's the American version of Siberia or something like that.
Pretty much, yeah. But the big meet and greet didn't last as long as it was supposed to, or it lasted a lot longer because all they're doing is fighting with each other.
You know, this latest little thing that's going on with with both China and the U.S. and also the little back and forth Putin that got into the news, I find rather amusing.
Yeah, well, we had a guy, actually a couple, that worked for the did some work. I'll be accurate here, for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and their job was, or their consulting agreement was, to actually be like the hosts for people from the Chinese agricultural group, because even though on the top end we're fighting with these guys, there's a lot of collaboration going on. Trying to talk on a Friday morning in regards to there's a lot of agriculture trade, so a bunch of their people came over and they spent like 2 weeks doing tours of stuff here. And matter of fact, these people that used to be affiliated with PTI loosely, they would give some lectures, and this is how crop insurance works. This is They take them to a dairy farm. We took them to a, I actually went with, because I wanted to see it, an ethanol plant, which I thought was spectacular. Carl, I could have spent a week there. You could imagine me with all the pipes and you know, and stuff going around from place to place. I mean, I thought it was, you know, you put me in there for a month. But, anyway, we took them to stuff like that. And, the only thing I went on the ethanol trip, and I went on the barge tour. When they talked about it, and the barge tour was spectacular. I mean, as much as my brother probably knew most of this stuff, but I'd never been in one through one. The only lock I'd ever been through is the one in the Lake Michigan. It's like, what? Well, now it's up to like 3 feet. But, it was like, you know, it was like a foot and a half. The one, we go to this one in the Illinois River, and you're looking up, the thing's like 200 feet. I'm looking up, and I'm going, what if this thing screws up? We're like 200 feet below where the water level is going to be in like 2 minutes. And sure enough, there you go. You start going up. And then you get to the, I mean, pretty scary stuff. But I only wanted a couple of those things. I would really recommend anybody to do that. The I don't know who does that. Department of Agriculture. Somebody runs a barge tour on the Illinois River. It is really something. It's about 4 hours. You go through a couple of the locks, and they tell you all about, you know, how you get the big chain of, barges through there and breaking them apart and when the blocks were all... Anyway, it's pretty fascinating. But we had these people here. We go to dinner. There's this guy from the Options Institute, good friend of us and those guys. I think he had an early stroke. Anyway, but he had some medical problems. Nicest guy. But he was one of these guys, if there was an alligator, Carl, he'd want to poke it, right? And these people from China were all younger people. And, you know, one young lady, and actually she was... Let's just say she's pretty attractive. She's like the leader of the thing. She's 27. She took a train from wherever the hell she was living, and it took her 20-some hours to get to Beijing, and inside of 5 years, she'd worked her way up in the agriculture department and had a real nice job to where she was over here for 2 weeks. But she was pretty honest, and she would say, yeah, you know, if you're going to come over and do business, you got to have a, you know, a guy from the government has to be like your guy. That he's usually a son or daughter of one of the big shots, and how, you know, you have to, that guy ends up getting paid by you or something. But she also would say stuff like, there used to be like six or seven rivers in Beijing, and now like all but one are dried up or something due to the climate change that they've pretty much done on themselves. But anyway, so Jimmy, this guy from my, we're sitting there at dinner, and there, all of a sudden there's like a big silence, and he goes, hey, what about that Taiwan?
Just like, oh.
And of course, I'm sitting there. I'm not hosting the thing. You see the guy who's hosting it. His face just kind of go, and they go, when they had their spiel, they said, we think it's like an adolescent child doing their thing for a while, but they'll eventually be back home or something along those lines. And I mean, that's obviously not our policy. That's an independent country, and I don't think that there's anything we can negotiate necessarily on that. So, I mean, there's things that we are, you know, they think they should have slave labor. We don't care in the extent of, if we don't know about it, we don't care because we get our blue jeans cheaper. But if we know about it, then we care, I guess, right? Or, I mean, we have issues that, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I mean, I think the biggest problem, though, that we have is that when you get down to it, what we're doing as a country is incompatible with any kind of permanent reason, in terms of, you know, economic balance. And if we think that we're going to be able to get away with what we've been doing for the last, you know, 20 years or so with this, we're wrong. We're not.
Well, they must look at our policy. I mean, obviously you and I've learned a lot from you, and I'm putting smoke up your behind regarding this China stuff, because it's something I never really focused on that much until I started doing the show, and now I've had you and Lou, and then we had the Uyghur guy on. So, I mean, obviously, I've gone from on a scale of 1 to 10 of knowledge, I went from a 0.5 to probably a 4. You know, so I'm gaining on it. So I'm pretty happy with myself about that. But they must look at us like we are the most scattered people they've ever seen. I don't think you can even define our policy. If it's a country that complains, or if a company complains enough, like the Trump, where he listens to them, and he raises holy hell, that lasts for like a little while. And then somebody else, somebody goes to Biden or whoever and says, by the way, we're Kentucky Fried Chicken, and look at the amount of stores we got, then he totally backs off. I mean, our policy must look just horrible from the other side, or good for their advantage.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the you know, that's a lot of the problem, is that we, on the one hand, we're scatterbrained. On the other hand, the one thing that we don't have a problem with and they don't have a problem with, which is part of why we get in so much trouble with this, is that it all comes down to money. They fundamentally look at themselves as having essentially a two-class society. There are the people that are part of the CCP, and they're actually part of the party, and then there's everybody else, and they're essentially cattle.
Well, yeah,
and you know, the problem is, to a large degree, that's also true here in the United States.
Well, sure it is, yeah.
And see, the thing is that how do you have a stable society when you do that? When you take all of the things that you need to have for a vibrant, balanced economy, and you offshore all that labor because it's 10 cents cheaper or it's a dollar cheaper. And I mean, you know, when you start talking about slave labor, the obvious lowest cost for any dollar of labor is zero, right?
So
if you can find a way to get it for zero, then you quote unquote win. And yet, look at what just happened with Ford. They're taking a plant and moving it down to Mexico, okay, out of Ohio. And this is, again, we were all told if we just allow, and this was what we were, remember, we were sold this with NAFTA, that if we allowed this to happen, we allowed these plants to be moved, that what would occur is the wages in Mexico would rise to rough parity with the United States. The market would expand dramatically because all these people would then be buying these expensive cars and trucks, and therefore everybody wins. We win, they win, we all win. Stock prices go up, everybody's happy, we all love each other. It didn't happen.
Why do you think it didn't? I mean,
because at the end of the day, there's no bargaining power there for the people that are on the labor side, and the same's true in China. And that's fundamentally the error, is that you think if the thumb wasn't on the scale from the government, it would have happened. Because that's the egalitarian economist's view of things, is that labor always holds the power to turn around and strike and say, bite me, I'm not going to work unless you pay me more. Okay? The problem is that thesis assumes that the government cannot find some way to compel you to show up. And in China, it's very simple. They bulldoze your rice paddy. You don't have the choice to be a peasant anymore. You either work in a factory or you starve.
Well, the people who felt that going early on in terms of economic theory, I mean, it happened after I left graduate school, which was in 76. But obviously the guy I always talk about, Milton Friedman, was essentially, I use the word, he got tossed out of the University of Chicago based on public opinion.
Yeah.
Because he was a guy, and I remember this, David, he was a guy that was absolutely convinced. If you would have turned in a paper that said, even though a country is becoming much more economically free, that the totalitarian regime would be able to maintain control and drive the economic growth to some that only a few people get versus the rest, I think that paper would come back to you with a big F. From Milton Friedman, he'd say that cannot happen. That once that economic freedom is a precursor to political freedom, and they absolutely all believe that. Why they believe that, I don't know. That clearly has not happened. I think you look at what happens around you in this country. Labor did get power over a period of time because it was an economic
up to a point.
Then they don't anymore, and until one, because now what's happened with the offshore stuff really puts us back in terms of supply and demand for labor, kind of like we were in 1915, right, or 1890.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, now it's and that's the problem, is that when you make it socially acceptable for this kind of a thing to go on, and you allow it over an extended period of time, how do you come back from that? Right, because, you know, think about the situation here. If we were to say, we're not doing this anymore, all right, we're just not doing this anymore, period. It's official policy of the United States that any kind of coercive labor arrangement, guess what, have a nice day, you're done. If you try it, you're not selling your products here in the United States, you're not listed on the New York Stock Exchange, you're not listed on the NASDAQ, you're out, period. Go do what you want in the United States, but your products and services don't come here. if you did that, the market would crash. In
15
minutes, it would crash.
Oh, sure. But
So is that ever going to happen?
Well, anytime you put something, you know, you poke a stick into where supply and demand is acting normally or competitively, you cause a problem. I mean, in this country, look at what's happened with the, regular people, middle classes, which is dropped again this morning, David and I heard on the way in. You are competitive in your wages. Now you have, in some places you've got minimum wages and so forth, which I'm not saying right or wrong. It sometimes can mess with the supply and demand if they're too high. If they're too low, they don't bother anybody, right? I mean, because everybody's getting paid more net anyway. So, but what happens is right now, if you were to say, we're not going to pay, for instance, the, grocery stores. You know, the checkout ladies, well, there's guys too.
Right.
They, if you looked at how much they made in 1965, well, that was a tough job because you had to actually pound the machine yourself, right? I mean, you had forums like Popeye to work one of those things. And, well, now with the scanners, you can probably do, I won't say twice as much because those ladies are pretty darn fast, say 1.5 times as much as they did back then. And so it should be either, you get paid a little more, and some of that goes to the company. And by the way, my price for milk should be down, you know, 0.1 cent or something. That's the way the economy is supposed to work. But it doesn't. Somehow or another here, we don't have that much competition in grocery stores anymore, or anything, really. So not only is she getting paid less than she was before, certainly way less per item, right? Which, you know, obviously it's an easier job, but still you're going twice as fast. So, I mean, some of the return to a productivity should go to the person running the machine. Not all, but some. And at the end of the day, but here it's what's happened. We have all these different levels of competition. All that it means is the head of Juul is making 4 times as much as he was making before, and the prices are not any lower. We've got somehow or another, that's not the way it ought to be, but we have levels of competition. Like, the farmers have competition, but now there's only a couple of cereal companies, right? So it's not like the price of corn goes down 5%, your price of cereal is going to go down. If anything, the guy gets a raise from Kellogg's, right, which is not exactly the way it's supposed to play out. So all this economic theory that these guys were in the early 70s and late 60s were essentially spouting out, which made all the sense in the world, people have a way to screw up even economic theory, right?
Oh yeah, and well, but the thing is that, I mean, the nature of business is to try to find ways to, you know, to get your competitor, right? I mean, that's the entire point.
But if everybody does that, that's the
reason we're supposed to have rules is to prevent that exploitation.
Well, the thing you're not supposed to be able to do is just buy your competitor, and so you don't have a competitor.
Yeah, well, it's been illegal for over 100 years to, regardless of how you do it, to have any kind of a scheme to monopolize or restrain trade. Heck, at least in theory, if I and one of my 100 competitors in Chicago sat down and we started talking about prices over a couple of beers, we could all go to jail.
How did this, when I was, I won't say a big shot because I was never a big shot, but I was on one of the members of the floor that was on the board. And we had some guys, Duke Chapman was the chairman, and Chuck Henry was the president, and Bill Flourish was the vice chairman. And I'm going to say, even though Duke came from, his dad was the guy who was from Capital Cities. Remember, those are the guys that bought ABC. And David should know, he's a high-end kind of guy. What's the huge club right off Central Park East? It's not the New York club that was downtown. It was the one that Carnegie built. This massive, you know, private men's club kind of thing. Well, Duke's dad was one of the leaders of that place for a while, and his portrait in the Hall of Big Shots was bigger than Carnegie's. Anyway, but those guys, they were some of the most moral guys, some of the nicest guys I've ever met. I mean, Chuck Henry was an absolute saint. Bill Flourish, my best friends to this day. But Bill would tell me, he goes, I could never call, or Duke, we could never call the the head of the Philadelphia Exchange and start talking, hey, how about if we raise prices and you raise prices, or how about we like buy you guys or something? You could never do that. That's why whenever there was a meeting with like the SEC where they brought in like the heads of like all the different places, it gave you cover to actually like talk to the other guy. Still didn't. But now nobody seems to care. If you were to say to 99% of the population, no, the head of Ford can't call GM and start talking about fixing prices, they go, what do you mean? That's just business. No, it's not. I mean, but you know what? We'd be one in the room that said that, Carl. If you weren't there by my side, I'd be the only guy there that said, no, you can't do that. Or you're not supposed to be able to do that. I'd say, what are you talking about? That's just business.
I mean, but see, that's the whole problem, is that you look at all of the things that have gone on for all of these years, okay? I'm convinced that an awful lot of the BS that's gone on for the last year related to COVID and the lockdowns and all this stuff is about the same thing that it was about back in 2007, 2008, 2009 when Obamacare was put in, and that is that the medical monster has eaten the economy, and it's gotten to the point now where you're starting to infringe upon what has to be there or the entire system pulls back and collapses. And I've been talking about this problem specifically within Medicare and Medicaid for 25 years. Okay, it's not my first rodeo with this nonsense, because it was something that I identified as an existential threat when I was running my internet company. I could see it in the budget. I could see it in the data. I could see what it was doing to myself and everybody else who was having to write those checks. And saying, hey, guys, the snake is going to eat its tail. All right, at which point there's no more snake. And so we are still doing this, and yet it's not just there. People are like, well, you know, we can't really take that on, because if you do that and you take the 20% of GDP that's healthcare and you put it back to 4%, there's an instant depression, because that's a 15% drop, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, but how about the fact that now, virtually every vehicle is assembled or made with parts outside the United States? You have some exceptions. You know, you have a Hyundai plant in Alabama. You have a VW plant in Tennessee. There's exceptions, and there's still some cars made in the United States. But the reality is that we are taking all of these. How many shoes are made in the U.S.? Okay, how does Nike just had a very interesting earnings report just came out. All right, revenue's down, but net profit's up. How's that happen?
You raise prices. It's very simple.
Well, of course, but remember where they're being made, okay? They're getting slave labor out of China putting these things together.
Well, the weird part is, I don't know how we're leaving another question, because I was doing my inflation rant earlier. When, if ever, in today's world, because I was very disappointed with Powell's thing the other day, why didn't anybody ask him why they stopped giving weekly money supply numbers? What's he trying to hide? How do you not ask the guy that question at his press conference?
Well, yeah, and then, and you look at what's going on in the general sense. I mean, take a look at lumber, board feet, random board feet, lumber, and futures prices. Look at gasoline. Go down the line and say, tell me that inflation is really 2%. Cut the BS.
But how do I listen to more of this than I ever want to on CNBC and these other places? How did not one person notice they stopped giving out weekly money supplies except people on this show?
Because nobody cares. You know, it's the same thing that happened during the crash in 08. I caught Bernanke yanking money supply out of the system, out of the sloshing cash in the system, into the middle of the collapse. He did it on purpose.
Why?
I don't know why, but I faxed proof of this to every single member of Congress. I spent the money on a fax machine on my system to do that, and at the next Humphrey Hawkins, you'd think somebody would have said, hey, buddy, you just testified that during this crash, which just happened, you were adding to the money supply to stabilize the markets. And yet, here is the data from your own New York Fed trading desk that says you did exactly the opposite. You took $63 billion out.
Well, see, Carl, you don't understand. The solution to that is that give you not access to that data.
Well, and now that data is irrelevant because of all the other nonsense that they're doing, right?
Well,
but at the time, it was an extremely useful piece of information that I used to use every day to inform trading decisions.
Well, yeah, now they don't want other people. Some people are still getting it, obviously. I mean, one of these days, when the Fed does turn the bus around and says, instead of me, we're going out and buying some stuff, we're actually going to sell some stuff, or we're just not going to buy today, that information, you'll find out about it because the spoos will be down 100 before the opening, and you'll say, what just happened? And we'll probably never find out what happens unless you're Jamie Dimon or somebody. But all of a sudden, that phone call that goes every day, go buy me something, go accumulate a bunch of crap at whatever price you can get, $120 billion a month they're buying of assets, right? So somebody has to accumulate that. At a price lower than they're going to sell it to the Fed for, right? And oh, by the way, we get commissions on both sides. This is what did the guy say in the Animal House? This is great, flounder. I mean, how can we be in this world of information so blind to this stuff? We don't even ask. You're never going to stop. You're never going to help the world of information if you don't ask the question. Why do we let these guys get away with this in this world? Where I'm not saying these are mortal sins. I'm just saying there's stuff that they make the guy say why'd you stop doing this? You've been giving us these numbers for 80 years, and all of a sudden you're not at a very kind of a crucial time when somebody's liable to say, hey, look at these numbers, look what you're doing to them. It's crazy, Carl. But I don't see any real pushback other than people are just generally in a malaise. They don't even know kind of why. It's hard to put. Well, anyway, let's go to break and then We'll talk about it after. S&P futures now up 875. These are the June futures. NASDAQ futures, again, the June futures are 85, up 85. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday's carnage. We'll see if we hold. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, Humpback Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us as well. And we have a market that is trying to get back a little bit from yesterday's fiasco. This is after a kind of a rocky start to our meetings in with China up in Alaska. And we're not sure exactly why. Well, I guess it's midway, huh? Dow futures are up 29. NASDAQ futures are up 87. And the Dow and the E-minis slash S&P are up 1050. This is the June contract. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 86. That's 0.6%. FTSE down 60.9%. CAC around down 44.7%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 424. That's 1.4%. Shanghai down 58 to 1.7%. By the way, the DAX is coming off a record, so it's still pretty darn high. Hang Seng down 414, 1.4%. We've got bonds down 3 basis points to 1.69 off that 1.74 or 5 top from yesterday. Bund minus 0.03 at minus 29. The Japanese 10-year is at 0.10, where it's been like for a real long time. And the UK is a positive 0.82. We've got oil is actually, it's down 25 cents. I was under 60, 59, 20, 75. I think it topped out around 65 maybe-ish. Brent down 38 cents, 62.90. Natural gas up a penny, 2.49. RBOB down a penny at 1.92. Down from really 2.05. That's a pretty big move. It's a, 6% move really in about 6 days. We've got gold, which was up earlier, but still up at 7.50, 17.40. Silver down 3 cents, 26.32. Copper down 2 cents, 4.08. And we've got crypto. We've got the Bitcoin up at $1,300 now, 59,066. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, and sports, Mr. David?
Good morning, 7:35 in Chicago. Traffic currently is building as normal. A little heavier on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to the ongoing construction. We do have heavy traffic on the Stevenson North due to the backup on the exit ramp at I-94. And there is a closure due to an accident at Wolf Road South between Franklin Avenue and Fullerton Avenue. Weather today currently is 35 and sunny. We're going to reach a high today of 40, and it'll be clear skies and sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 52 and clear out at the moment, and they're going to have highs of 85 degrees with full sunshine. In the NHL last night, the Coyotes lost to the Ducks 3-2 in overtime, and the Hawks drop another one to the Lightning 4-2. In the NBA, the Suns lose to the Timberwolves 123-119, and the Bulls take on Denver tonight. NCAA March Madness Tournament. Last night, in the playing game, Drake beat Wichita State 53-52 in their first tournament victory in 50 years to the date. And UCLA beat Michigan State in overtime 86-80. Illinois takes on Drexel today at noon, and Loyola plays Georgia Tech at 3 o'clock. We did have some baseball yesterday. Sox beat the Royals 9-7, and the Cubs beat Cleveland 4-3. Back to you, Chief.
We, hey, Carl, we have a, before we continue what we were saying, I got a missive from one of my, let me put it this way. It's really odd that some of the stuff I'm getting regarding this, I was going to talk about COVID for a second, but the stuff I'm getting now from this bill from Biden, it's pretty strange. It's from the right wingers telling me how, well, telling anybody, how this particular bill is so much for the upper class and not the lower class. It's you know what? It is absolutely correct. I mean, it's funny how when one side insults the other side, they're usually right. And one of the guys has been all over the numbers, and he said, you know, if we really wanted to help out poor people in this country, if we took the 100 million poorest people, because now there's like nobody left in the middle class, right, David, after the report we heard this morning, we could actually send them a check for 19 grand, and they wouldn't be poor anymore, right? At least not for a while. It's sort of right in there with the Nixon's negative income tax vis-a-vis the Great Society and how you apportion this money. I mean, it really, this is a bill for rich people and big companies where everybody's charged with winging a bone off the table to the dog, and we're the dog, I think. And it is that. Am I being too harsh with this or not?
No, you're not being too harsh with it at all. And, you know, again, what we keep coming back to is that, you know, the same basic problem that you can somehow, just out of the middle of nowhere, just hand stuff out. And this does not actually hurt people, it helps them. The idea that you're, you know, giving you $1,400 when you print it up $9,000 per person. Right? I mean, if you think about the insanity of doing something like that. All right, so we're doing what? We're taking, you know, 5-6 times as much and just lighting it on fire and pretending like you're never gonna have to pay for any of that. Right? Well, that of course is nonsense. You're gonna have to pay for all of it immediately, and you already are. And yet here we are. And yet every single nation that has done this sort of thing, every time, has eventually seen the destruction of their civil society and their government.
And Carly, the other way to do it, I mean, there are times when you have issues and the government has to step in. I think there's been a serious amount of examples where they've stepped in a very intelligent manner, in a way that was good for the long term. I mean, if you see a certain group of society, of course, this COVID has hurt anybody on every level, really. Well, most companies, some companies it hasn't. But, you know, if you go back to the Depression, to borrow money from the people who had it, there's always somebody who has some money left, to borrow money from them, borrow, not steal, not tax, and build Hoover Dam or the TVA or the...
Right.
You know, I got to believe that the Golden Gate Bridge has paid for itself a gazillion times over through tolls, right?
Well, how about the Eisenhower interstate system?
Yeah. I mean, and some of that was toll. Well, actually, the tolls came earlier, and they just incorporated those into the system. But I'm saying the real investments were, you know, essentially the Hoover Dam, because you've made it back so much more in taxation from Imperial Valley and, by the way, for electricity, right? I mean, the thing was... So, but you borrowed the money. So those people got paid back with interest. So they're happy. The government's happy. And oh, by the way, you created a whole bunch of jobs, and they were happy. So, but you did it in an investment sort of way. I mean, right now there are an awful lot of people with an awful lot of dough in this country. So if you went out and borrowed a bunch of money. And somehow, because of COVID, is an unusual event. I hope it is an unusual event. And you provided some financing at low cost to small businesses and kept them, or even airlines and stuff, you kept them in business for a little bit and they had to make the changes that, you know, that maybe they should. But if you did that, and at the end of the day, you stopped half of them from going under, or some percentage, so you didn't have those issues to deal with, and you eventually give the money back to the people with interest that you borrowed it from. There's nothing wrong with that, Carl. I mean, you make investments in dams and in bridges, and this time you made investments in people, or could have made investments in people because of a pandemic when you didn't let them do what they normally did. And even if you printed a little bit of money there, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But I have no idea why we were printing 8.5% a year since 2007. At the same time, every politician is saying it's the greatest economy in the history of the world. Well, you don't do both. It obviously wasn't the greatest economy, or the only reason why it was is because you're pouring money into the system and it looked like it was when it wasn't, which is probably the actual truth. But, I mean, there's no doubt if you and I were in government, even though we don't really like the idea of government getting involved so much, you and I would have said this is a time where government has to do something. We probably would have done something along the model of Hoover Dam and those other kinds of places. There's still all kinds of people. I mean, if we don't want to tax Bezos, at least let's entice the guy to lend us some dough for the rest of people for a while, right? I mean,
well, except the problem is that people like Bezos, the way he got all that cash in the first place.
I shouldn't use his name. I'm sorry. I'm just saying rich people in general.
Well, no, I'll use his name and I'll attack him directly for this.
So
okay? Because the way he got where he is by cheating.
Yes. Well, he didn't cheat.
And that's a fact. He went around and put up LLCs in different states with distribution centers and said, I don't have to pay sales tax. I don't have to collect it. I don't have to pay it. Well, that immediately gives you, what, a 5-6% price advantage over everybody else in the market?
11 in Chicago.
Well, it depends on where you are, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, 10, 11 in Chicago, 5-6 in a lot of places. But it is an insurmountable advantage that no local merchant will ever be able to match. And it is something that you can't get around. And every single time he got challenged on that, he folded and started collecting. Not once did he sue. Not once.
Well,
Hey, he knew he was wrong.
All right, let me ask you a psychology question. And I guess it comes down to whose axe is being gored is really what it comes down to. I mean, as people here in Chicago, you know, we have half a floor here for our firm. It's a small firm. We like what we do. We think we do a nice job for clients and so forth. Clients like us. But there's nothing here. we don't buy buildings. We don't buy cars. We don't do anything like that.
Right.
We had some bleep from the city come in and look around and see the computers, most of which we bought used. You know, when we originally opened up, we bought everything new and telephone systems. That was a long time ago. And by the way, they're still good. So the guy comes in and he's going to audit us based on sales tax.
Oh, right. Oh, no. We used to get that all the time.
And I'm like, sales, what are you talking about? Because it turns out, I used to go, well, I still should be, but I used to go to the chiropractor once a week. And on the way back, I'd stop at the Sam's Club in Hodgkins. And I'd
right.
buy, because we'd have seminars for people like every other Saturday. So I'd stop at the Sam's Club and I'd buy the cookies and the croissants and stuff. Because we always had a nice little buffet for everybody. And I'd buy the coffee, I'd buy the pop. I mean, you name it, orange juice if somebody wanted. So, you know, I'm spending, you know, whatever. Not that much, $200-$300 a week, $400 maybe, just for people for the seminar. I'd have, you know, little notepads for everybody, all this kind of crap. And I'm thinking, what's the law? I'm coming back from the suburbs. It's not like I'm going to Indiana. And, so they come in and, oh no, you didn't pay sales tax in Chicago. And I go, well, the Sam's is like a mile over the border. Well, at the time, Chicago wasn't letting any Sam's Clubs in Chicago or Walmart, right?
Right.
So guess the Sam's is nice enough that that they can't do it on food. So because of the seminars and everything, I actually spent over 50% on like food for on people for seminars, and you know, I'd buy stuff for the office, coffee, so people would have a Coke
right.
to have it. It turns out I was slightly. We're talking about maybe the whole cost of the year. I spent maybe $5,000. And fortunately for me, it was like $2,580 was on food, so we didn't get fined. The guy was here like 2 days. Okay.
Oh no, we had. I used to have that every single year. These guys would come into my office, and they would go through all the equipment in my building, and they wanted to see proof that we had paid the sales tax on all the, you know, all the machines and the racks in the back room, and all the computers that were on the floor and everything else. They were rapacious about this. And we never cheated, we never broke the law, they never found anything. But what they did do was screw with my people for like 2 days.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, and yeah, every single year they did this.
Well, the guy was convinced that my brother didn't have to run the firm or like take orders or talk to clients. It was all about this guy, right? But anyway, it's so clear to me that I've said this 100 times, that the Amazon stuff, it's on you. If you buy a TV from Amazon and you don't pay for $2,000 and you don't send them a whatever the number is,
no, it's on you.
It's on you. I have never seen anybody even mention it. Not even a question going. Is that because when it gets to the point where everybody's doing it, it's like what do they call it? We couldn't have any booze. Prohibition. What is Pfizer or Pfizer Pritzker? Doesn't want to find out the 1,000 biggest because his family members are going to be on it? Or what's the deal?
Well, that's part of the reason. But the other thing is that if you put a stop to it, okay, which is what the, you know, what should have been done years and years ago was that, okay, you know, the Quill decision stood for a long time when it comes to shipping across state lines. Fine. But if you structure the business so you functionally own the place, then if you try that game, you go to jail.
Well, I'm
and you know, and I looked at doing exactly, and the funny thing is, in the 1990s, before Amazon got all big and, you know, started stepping on every little business around the country, I looked at doing exactly what Bezos did when we expanded into Wisconsin. And I did, and I was looking at doing it for exactly the same reason he did it, and I was told by the corporate lawyer types, you do that, they're going to arrest your butt.
Well, regardless of the morality of it, which, you know, you and I obviously care about, because we like things even. Otherwise, if it's not even, it's not competitive. I mean, that's the angle we're coming at it from. But
absolutely.
But I want to come at it as a totally different direction. I mean, I actually saw a guy and his girlfriend or wife look at this huge TV. I went to Best Buy. I wanted to get like an extension cord for something, and here's this guy looking at this incredibly nice TV, and it's like 2G. Well, the guy pulls out his phone, takes a picture of the model number, it goes away, and he skims back. He says, I just ordered it from somebody and something. And right. By the way, we don't have to pay any taxes. And I'm sitting there thinking, what the morality of this? I'll leave that aside for a while, but the state is broke. The Best Buy, last time I checked, is paying a boatload of property taxes. They got 20 people employed here that are paying state income taxes.
Right.
And they're paying sales tax. And you just let somebody totally not only screw with Best Buy, but get around paying any tax. I mean, even if you're the most immoral man in the world, that as a governor, you can't let happen. Because
but they did.
And especially, now, does it mean, I mean, if I want to be a smart ass, I would say if I dug into, I don't even think of digging into Pritzker's bag pocket, whatever size pants he's wearing. But if I did, and am I going to find a big chunk of Best Buy stock? Or, I mean, of Amazon stock or something? I mean, you always wonder if...
You know, I think you probably will, Chief, and that's, yeah.
I mean, because this is, I mean, you don't have to be you and me with our education to see this. I mean, the guy next to me says to me, what's the guy doing? And I said, I think he just bought the TV online to save the taxes. The guy goes, you got to be kidding me. This guy's standing next to me in line. If that guy and me, two schlumps, can see what's going on, how does a governor miss all? And he wasn't governor at the time, so I just using them. But how do you, that transaction, not even if you don't go down the road of what would just cost the state, well, say 10, well, say 11% times 2 grand is what, 220?
Yeah.
It just cost the state 220. And if God help you, if the Best Buy went out of business because of it, because now you got a big building there. That, what are you going to do with that? You're not getting any income taxes. I mean, the stupidity of it is dramatic. And you're gonna do all this because what? Your wife's buying on Amazon or something? You're not going to enforce that? I mean, try and get a parking ticket in Chicago. They'll find you in a can, for God's sake.
Oh yeah, and you know, don't pay it, and then they'll put a boot on your car.
Yeah, I mean, so how was it that this company got basically absolution everywhere? And I mean, if you talk to people in the state, and I mean, I've been at parties, boy, if you don't like the people there, all you got to do once in a while is mention, you know, and especially the Amazon. By the way, they just bought Thursday Night Football. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
$1 billion, and it's not even going to be on TV? You got to have a streamer?
Well, I'm sure that that's the game. We'll see whether or not it works out for them because, quite honestly, I can't imagine that, like, your local pub is going to, you know, fork up whatever their carriage price is to have that streaming so that it's there.
Well, I mean, they'll probably have to. They won't like it. But
I guess we'll find out. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So what I mean, if I was governor, the first thing I'd do, boy, I'd never get elected again. What is it? How come people have told me, and you probably know more about this than anybody, that you can't subpoena Amazon for the records for people in Illinois that bought... If one of my buddies was in the military for like a decade, and he comes back and he gets a regular driver's license, and all of a sudden they hit him up for a parking ticket that he had 10 years ago before he went in the military. There's no statute. There's no nothing on those things. How is it? Why can't somebody just subpoena those guys? I want to know everything that was shipped to Illinois from 2000 on. And just send everybody a bill. And if they get it, screw him. I mean, if his wife gets a bill for 20 grand, screw her too. You know, I mean, why not? They're doing it to everybody else and everything else.
Well, I think, you know, that's the thing is that what you get is you get the threat that comes from Basil's office, which is you do this, we're going to close every single one of our warehouses and offices in your state, and we're going to throw 4,000 people out of work, and you can go to hell.
Well, so what? We lived without them for how many years?
Well, I understand that, but that's the threat. Okay,
and I bet they won't do it.
That's what they do, and it's the same. What has Ford and GM done? All right. Well, if you do this, we're going to close that plant, and move to Mexico, and then they don't do it, and they close the plant, and move to Mexico anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what'd you get out of that? How about Foxconn in Wisconsin? Hello.
Well, I mean, all you'd have to do is say to people, okay, look it, we have. I wouldn't go down to the homeless guy who bought something 20 years ago. Here's a list of the 1,000 people that bought the most on Amazon for the last 20 years. We know who you are. You know who you are. You want to send us the stuff in. By the way, we'll take it. And if you send us today, because we were a little bunch of schlumps for not coming after you earlier, if you owe us 1,000, send us 500 and we're done. If not, we're coming after you for 1,000 plus interest plus everything else. Just do something like that. I mean, why?
Well, it's, and again, you know, one of the big reasons it doesn't happen is because they, you know, you get these guys that they pick up the phone, and they say, well, you know, if you do that, we're going to blankety blank you in the you know what the next time the election comes up.
Well, okay, but we need somebody. I don't know if we need a guy who's a 94 to get elected or something. We need somebody. The first thing he says is, I'm not running again. Screw you. I don't care. I'm here to change something for 4 years. After that, you're on your own. I mean, right?
My way of looking at it is, see, I've always said, you got to find 90% issues if you want to try to actually break through from a political and an operational perspective in this country. And I've advocated for a long time, the low-hanging fruit on that is the medical monopolists.
Oh, sure.
You will make 20% of the population hate you because they work for those people, okay? And everybody else is going to think you're God.
Well, when I...
But nobody will touch it, and it's the same thing with things like this Amazon stuff.
Well, I think the people in that... people I talk to, some of them, I don't know that a doctor's happy with the new regime. I don't think that... one of my friends, his in-law, was a... what do you call a technician at like an MRI thing? I mean, whatever, the guy runs the MRI machine, basically. And he said their hospital got bought by, I think it was North Shore, I'm not positive. He said the first thing we did is get our wages cut, and they raised the price of the MRI from $2,500 to $5,000.
Yeah.
He goes, it wasn't like they raised it from $2,500 to $5,000, and while we were complaining about that, they gave us a bonus to shut us up. They cut us. He goes, what the hell?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what's even worse. I got people right now in the medical system who have asked me not to use their names, that have been told directly, if you go into a hospital with COVID, they will not give you ivermectin, even though it is an FDA-approved drug, because the FDA says, we don't have any proof that that works. All right, now let me remind you that people with lupus and RA have been using hydroxychloroquine for 20 years. It's off-label, it's not an approved use, and yet there are several million Americans who take that drug every single day because it works, even though it is not for that particular condition. It's an anti-malarial, but it works. So you get a new disease. We have some evidence that this is effective. We know it's safe. There have been 3 billion doses of this drug that have been handed out over the last 20 or 30 years. It's safer than aspirin, and yet if you ask for it, they won't give it to you. And the reason is not that they're worried about the FDA, but because their corporate boss has told them not to use it.
Right.
Okay? Now, think about that. So now you don't have a doctor who actually practices medicine anymore. You don't have anybody that follows the... all you have is, here's a flow chart. You come in, this is what's going on, this is what we're going to do. And, oh, by the way, remdesivir, which costs $3,000, large trial that was completed towards the end of the year, it said it's absolutely worthless. And yet that is the standard of care. If you go into a hospital with a coupe right now, they will shove that up your arm.
That's wild. I mean, I know when my mom had the cancer, they remember the drug, remember Avastin?
Yeah.
There was a drug that never worked on anything, but it was $2,000 a shot, and they kept trying to find a disease where it worked on because they wanted their $2,000.
Well, the same thing happened with remdesivir.
It's bizarre. Hey, Carl, I looked at some of these. I was looking at some earnings plays this week, shifting gears totally here, page 5. We only got a couple minutes. And I looked at a couple. I don't want anybody to take it on the idea that, you know, they should go sell them or anything like that. But cloud plays. And they're all trading for, you know, 80 times revenue, for God's sake. I mean, and God knows, I mean, there's no earnings to speak of.
Right.
And, you know, if the market keeps behaving the way it is, at least like yesterday, I mean, these things could be, you know, 20% of the value, and I wouldn't look at them and say they were cheap, to be honest with you. Why is it we can't get anybody to change this $3,000 deduction on capital gains? Why is that so off the table, nobody even talks about it, asks about it, even says a boo on it at CNBC or any place?
Because this is the scheme, and people think that there is some way to take 10% of your income or whatever you can set aside if you're an ordinary schlub, and get out there in the market with it and stay ahead of inflation and stay ahead of the money printing and all that. And of course, statistically, that's impossible unless you take so much risk that you're outperforming by 10 times.
Right.
Okay. So that's just not going to happen. But this is what everyone sold. And the problem is if you turn around and say, okay, losses are expenses up to your income level. All right, so basically you can zero your income tax liability this way. But, of course, you know, then you used it and it's gone, right? But every business can do this.
Right.
Right, when I filed my 1120, if I had a loss for my C-Corp, well, guess what? It was off the top line, dollar for dollar.
Well, that's right. I don't understand why people don't... I mean, the whole idea with the medical stuff, there are people that are sole props that are paying for their medical expenses...
Oh yeah.
Well, after tax, and why they're not all, you know, I want to say C corp, but maybe that would even help with an LLC or something where you can deduct it. I don't even begin to think why people don't. But I mean, one of the reasons for that, and I know you're going to say there wasn't a surplus. The alleged surplus during the Clinton administration was a lot of the dot bomb stocks ran up to $300. The people who sold them had to pay taxes, and the people who bought them there at 300 just sucked on them, didn't get a chance to deduct it, right?
Well, yeah, and they died before they used up the whole thing at $3,000 a year.
Well, $3,000 a year, if you lose a couple hundred grand, you better live a long time.
Well, exactly. That was the problem.
But just in general, I mean, whether or not it should be infinite, that you can work it up to income or something, but it's astounding to me that number is the same as when I entered the business. When I entered the business, the Dow was 800. Now it's 32,000.
Why don't you just index it to, just index, I mean, even the CPI would be a scam, but just index it to the CPI.
Yeah, I mean, at least, oh, by the way, I have a question for Kevin. Came real close on this, and I'm going to see if you come closer, because you guys are always on a little bit of a, he likes to outright you, and you like to outright him. By the way, he loves listening to you. Magic Johnson, 1981, got his $1 million a year contract, which they, you know, gave more money pretty quickly thereafter. In 1991, how much was that worth if you get the inflation out of it? Kevin was within $4,000.
Oh boy, I'd have to sit down and actually do the numbers on that.
Well, you don't get the.
I mean, now what are we're using the CPI.
Yes, back when it actually meant something. Now it means nothing. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'd have to actually sit down and look at it.
Well, he said 650, and it's 646.
Yeah. Okay.
So roughly two thirds. Which I mean, and the other question we don't have any time. We'll ask you next week. Take care of yourself, buddy. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures down 9. NASDAQ Futures down 32. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.